There's Molly, a rebuilt 53 Chevy, and a painting of a saxophone created with stencils, spray paint, and acrylic. Art is everywhere. Stay tuned. Good afternoon. I am Chrissy Hewitt, and this is Ears on Art, a twice-monthly program that my co-host, Stephen DeLuque, and I produce here at the studios of KCBX Public Radio for the California Central Coast. Our emphasis is on the visual arts. Today's guests are local painter Jason Town and vintage car lover and restorer Gene Kruger. They are two of the many creative people who will be displaying their talents in a special Art After Dark exhibit at the UCC Congregational Church on Los Osos Valley Road in San Luis Obispo. That all takes place this Friday, October 7th, from 5 to 9. The vintage cars will be on display only Friday evening, but the paintings and sculpture from many local artists will be at the church throughout the month. It will be wise to check with the church and make sure that they are open before you go and take a visit. This month is full of art activities, and Stephen will help you fill out your calendars at the end of this program. But first, we'll have our visit with Jason Town and Gene Kruger. Jason Town, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And Gene Kruger.
Good afternoon.
They are both involved in an exhibit that's going to be happening in Los Osos, and we'll give you all of those dates later on. It opens on Friday evening. So, Jason, you are going to be a part of this exhibit with paintings?
Yes. I'll be hanging, I think, 4 paintings, some figurative pieces, some abstract pieces, various sizes.
Great. And Gene, you actually are involved with restoration of old cars, correct?
That's correct.
Tell us about the automobile.
Well, we will have several automobiles on display. I have 2 automobiles. One is a 1933 Chevrolet Master, which I've had for about 6 or 7 years. And also I have a 1961 Mercedes 220S. Which my wife and I purchased probably about 1963.
And you've actually done restoration on them?
Well, the 61, actually we drove it as our everyday car. A little unusual in those years to have a Mercedes. I first saw a Mercedes when I was in Monterey, when I was a child, and I saw this Mercedes take off down the street, and I thought, wow, that is really something. So when shortly after we got married, we bought the 61, and it was our everyday car for 18 and a half years. And then I crashed it into a truck. I couldn't part with it, so I had to start all over again. So I found another body. The 2 cars all apart, and it took me 15 years to put them all back together and restore them. So it was quite a journey.
Indeed. Jason, when actually did you start with creating, with art?
I've basically drawn my whole life, all throughout my school years. I drew all the time. And it actually wasn't until 2002 that my mother passed away. And as a way to cope with her passing, I started painting. And it was actually my mother's friend who advised me to try it. So that's kind of how I started. It's been 14 years now and still making paintings. So it's worked out.
Had you painted before? Is this acrylic, oil, combination of different medium?
Mostly acrylic and spray paint on canvas. And sometimes on wood, but mostly acrylic and spray paint on canvas. I started out with just paintbrush, acrylic paint, just kept it simple. But then over time, just working with different techniques and different mediums, I found that acrylic and spray paint just work out the best.
You have just explored and kind of taught yourself how to get where you want to go?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. No formal training. I've taken a couple art classes here and there. And then I actually went to college for a few years to study graphic design. But working with different mediums, different techniques, figuring out what works for me, that's pretty much the way I did it.
I think it's always really neat when somebody has enough self-motivation to get where you want to go.
Yeah, and I think there are a lot of people who are formally trained. They pick up habits that everyone else who's being formally trained picks up. Whereas if you kind of fly by the seat of your pants, you stumble upon things that may not be taught in a formal setting. So, yeah.
That's absolutely true. And I know that, as you say, when you just do it and nobody's saying, but you're not supposed to do it that way, something often pretty exciting happens.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, you develop habits, good and bad. And sometimes the best techniques come out of working through some terrible habits. The messier you get with the paint when you're trying to figure stuff out, it feels like a terrible habit of just creating one mess after another. And you end up with, you know, one painting that's good out of 10 paintings. And then eventually you have two paintings that are good out of 10 and so on. And once you break that halfway point where you make 10 paintings and five of them are pretty good, then you get that feeling that, okay, I feel like I'm on the right track. And that's kind of how it works for me.
As we've often said on this program, you have those days or periods, and then all of a sudden, what happened? And you try to find another route and stuff, which is what creative process, I guess, is all about. Mm-hmm. Gene, when you had to start working on this Mercedes due to crashing it, had you worked on cars before then?
I guess we can go way back. Why am I interested in cars? I think it was from my grandfather. He had an Essex we used to call a putt-putt, and he would take me to the museum there in Exposition Park in L.A. Downstairs, they had a display of old cars. I was a small child then, you know, and I saw these old cars, and I just thought they were so neat. I always wanted him to take me there, you know. I don't think he always wanted to go there, but that was my beginning of my interest. And of course, in the early teens in the country, there were many, many manufacturers of cars. A lot of those manufacturers only lasted for like 2 or 3 years. Everybody wanted to try to produce a car in those days. That's what piqued my interest. And then when I was in the Boy Scouts, one of the older leaders had a 33 Chevy. Some reason I just thought that was a really neat car. So one day I was to school, and here was this rusty old 33 Chevy in somebody's driveway. I was like 14 at the time. So I went and I asked the person, what would you want for this? And he didn't know. I said, well, how about $10? He said, okay. So my brother helped me tow it home to the backyard in my house in L.A. I took this car all apart, completely disassembled the car. I took the body off the frame. I stood the frame up behind the garage. And, you know, in those days, you could clean things anywhere, you know, and all the grime and everything went on the ground, the oil. We used to bury the oil in the backyard, you know. We had incinerators then, you know.
I grew up with an incinerator in the backyard. I don't know that we were burning much oil, but I certainly remember it.
Yeah, one time I threw some gasoline in that incinerator, and I tell you, it scared me to death. I don't think my dad really appreciated me messing up the backyard with his car. But I had parts all over the place, and you know, and visiting junkyards, what we called them in those days, and they were very horrible places then. I don't know if you remember those, but they were awful places. There's oil and dirt, everything.
Most of my vision of that is from train travel, and that type of location is along the railroad track seems to be a place where they can sort of hide that from everything else. I, of course, think they're beautiful as I'm driving by taking as many pictures as possible of all of these stacked up vehicles. So that's my acquaintance with them. I haven't been on the ground, as they say, stepping or slipping or wishing I wasn't in the oil or anything else.
Well, I did a complete restoration on the car by myself. It was my high school car. Most people in the 50s were driving their father's cars, much faster cars, but I had the, believe me, I had one of the oldest cars around, but it was pretty neat. I was quite individual.
Well, I certainly can understand how that love started and obviously has continued.
Well, then, of course, at my advanced age, I had to have another 33, so that's reasonable for the 33 Chevy now. And I've had it for like 6-7 years and been working on it on and off. It's kind of a neat car and very, very pretty car, actually.
Well, we're going to go take a look in a minute, see it up close and personal, as they like to say. Any more thoughts before we make this little tour that you want to add?
You know, I think that I'm a mechanical engineer by degree, and but there's a part of my brain that is art-oriented. If I see something another artist has produced, I have a thought in my brain about, you know, what I could probably do something like that also, but it would be on my own. I once saw a piece of art done on a piece of stainless steel, and it was just done with a stainless steel and a grinder. And I thought to myself, boy, I could do that too, you know, something like that.
Again, we talk all the time about the crossover of disciplines, and that somehow we can stereotype and say, well, an engineer is as far from an artist. And it's like, no, that isn't really the case. And an awful lot of other things that seem to have those overlaps just by how we look at the world.
Yeah, actually, if you think back to the Renaissance, many of the artists of that time were inventors, you know, architects, and they did painting, architecture, just improving life for people. So I think engineers and artists are a lot closer than most people think. The 33 car that we're going to go look at, that was someone's sketch, probably 1930, 31. That was someone's brainchild, somebody's sketch.
Yes, it is very important to remember that whether it's an automobile or you were talking about graphic design, the packaging that we see every day in our lives as we go to a market or any other type of store, somebody has to think about how to present those ideas.
Yeah.
And some of them become very functional in that way, but they often lead to something else.
Yeah.
You are listening to Ears on Art here on KCBX Public Radio. Our guests today are Jason Town, a local painter, and Gene Kruger, a lover and restorer of vintage automobiles. Before we go see his 53 Chevy, he had something special to show us. And once we have seen the car, we'll take a look at Jason's artwork. Here now is Gene Kruger.
This was created by an artist in Colorado.
This is a model of the 33 Chevy.
And the 33 Chevy has a name. It's Molly. We went to his studio, and he had all these models of cars, and they were commissioned by various people who were interested in having their own car recreated in a model. And so my wife secretly had this made for me and presented to me at my 70th birthday. It's
great, is what it is. And I'm loving the leather detail on the inside and not trying to make material look as though it was brand spanking new. We'll go find the real one. Lead the way, Gene. All right, so here we are at the real thing, a little different from the model.
From an artist standpoint, cars were originally, I would say, probably came from carriages. And so when they created the first Chevrolets, they were like this one. They're completely framed in wood. The sheet metal is tacked to the wood. So you don't see too many General Motors cars around this age because of that. The evolution of the car, of course, they were very kind of squarish looking, and this is the 33 was the first year that they had, you know, a slanted and V-shaped grille, so it was beginning more streamlined. And as you can see, it's three-tone. It's kind of a beige and then a dark brown and with orange wheels and striping. These are original colors. Ford at the time, if you remember, you could have one color, it was black.
Right.
And General Motors, it's probably with DuPont, they started painting cars with beautiful colors. And I think that's probably what helped sell them, actually. So
do you drive it much now?
I'm with the Vintage Chevrolet Club of America, and we don't have a chapter here on the Central Coast, unfortunately, but we had an event up at Lake Tahoe about a month ago, a national event, and we had like 200 Chevrolets, vintage Chevrolets, starting from about 1914 on. It's the first time I'd ever seen anybody actually hand crank a car. And that was pretty neat. I was going to drive it all the way to Tahoe, but, you know, thinking about how warm it would be in the Central Valley, I decided to put it on a trailer, and I trailered it up there. I chickened out.
So, well, that makes some sense, I think.
Yeah.
My grandmother, who was born in the 1800s mm-hmm. and grew up in Connecticut, and recently, my cousin was talking about some of her stories of when you talked about carriages, mm-hmm. that their car had the winter version and the summer version, and one would get hoisted off and stored, and then the other one would be put on. And I was going, whoa, that sounds not only like a lot of work, but definitely not anything that we're thinking about.
Well, driving these cars is quite different than modern cars today. Believe me, you really have to concentrate on the road and keep it going straight down the road. They weren't quite as easy to drive as today's cars.
I think I would be so concerned about not having it run into something that it would take some of that pleasure out of the pleasure drive.
Well, I do have seat belts. It obviously was not an option in those days. I've also done all the electrical work and put in LED taillights, so that maybe somebody might see me that I'm slowing down again. Also, the car has mechanical brakes, which are kind of scary things. But, you know, in today's world.
So at the exhibit, this car will be there, and then you said a few others done by other people?
Yes, there will be at least two Model A's and my car, and there will be, I think, one other car, I think a Mercury station wagon that recently was driven across the country about 6,000-7,000 miles, and then there'll be at least one other car that I know of.
And will those only be there for the opening, or are they going to be there for the duration of the exhibit?
They'll just be there the first day, I believe, yes.
Okay. So if you want to see them, you got to come to the opening. Jason, any thoughts?
It's a beautiful car. 1933. It reminds me of that era. It's just a beautiful piece of history, really. I'm not really a car guy, but I can admire the beauty of it.
I have made two trips to Cuba, and therefore have gotten a little fill of at least 50s models cars, and going, whoa, we really designed some interesting looking things back then, because now we drive down the road and all of us look exactly alike. And
right, the cars today, you can get the black or silver or white.
I think I had come to appreciate them, but seeing that many of them when I was in Cuba just gave me a different sense of, oh, we really are missing something these days by not having this around to enjoy all the time.
You might notice that it has a fabric top. Some people say, oh, is it convertible? No, it's not convertible. That's the way they had to make cars in those days, because they didn't have presses that could completely form a steel top. It wasn't until 1935 that they came with a steel top, and it was called, at least in Chevrolet anyway, it was called a turret top.
And I would have missed that, being not that short, but not tall enough that it really shows off unless I hopped up on the running board. That's probably a no-no. This will be really fun to see with the others at the opening. And I think now we'll trek back in and take a look at some of Jason's artwork, unless you have something more that you're needing to make sure we know, Gene, about the car. We're good?
We're good.
All right.
To blow the horn.
You're welcome to. I take sound effects. Sure, let's do it. Okay, so back inside, and Jason, talk about what's here.
Okay, so these pieces here, the saxophone, this abstraction, and then this abstract triptych down here, those are the pieces that I brought. Starting with the saxophone, this piece is mainly spray paint with a two-layer stencil for the saxophone, and then black paint pen to finish off the detail.
Okay, so you've created a stencil and then are spraying through that, because otherwise I was going, you're really talented if you're getting spray paint to do these fine, delicate lines.
No, the spray paint in the background, you have kind of a pink and a purple color, and then the dots in the background, that's from a custom stencil that I made, and then the saxophone detail, that's all from a custom stencil. So, yeah.
And what material are you making stencils out of?
I use poster paper, or sometimes I'll use Bristol paper.
Okay.
They work real well. They hold up for a long time. So that's the saxophone piece. This larger abstraction is basically layers and layers of brushwork with acrylic. And then there's a lot of paint pen worked in for some of the smaller fine line work. This probably took about 3 or 4 hours of painting time. And then this piece down here, this triptych, this is actually a smaller version. This is just a print. The bigger panels are actually 2 feet by 3 feet. So it's pretty large. I sold the original at a gallery show. And I had this print made because it was one of my favorites that I've ever made. And I actually call this one Peaceful Mood. It's a couple weeks worth of work. Many, many multiple layers of spray paint, acrylic, brushwork, and even some fine dripping in the back. Yeah, this is definitely my favorite piece.
We don't attempt very often to give a whole lot of description on air to people who can't see what we're talking about. But there's a spontaneity to it, and at the same time you can tell that a lot of work has gone into the coordination of the colors and the overlapping and everything. So unlike a Jackson Pollock, this one, even though he thought a lot too when he was doing things, even though people thought he didn't, this has some calmer areas in it.
I guess the way I would describe it is it just looks like a sunburst, almost like out in the galaxy. This is the direction of painting multiple layers of abstractions with custom stencils. That's the direction that I'm going in the future. The rays of light, it's not any particular type of style. The reason why I did it is because I wanted to create more of a composition where you know, I have all these different abstract elements just kind of floating out there. And I figured, okay, I want to put a light source and I want to have rays of light coming from that light source to give it kind of a depth. So that was my thinking behind that.
It works really well.
Yeah, thank you.
And quite a contrast from the saxophone. And the show is actually going to involve people doing sculpture, people doing painting, a whole lot of different disciplines going on. So be really intriguing.
Probably going to be something there for everybody.
Yes, I think so. I wish you both well, and it's really been interesting. Again, we can think that these are two different paths of car restoration and painting on canvases or boards, but once again, they're not. It's called passion, and when we have the passion, then something comes out.
That's correct. I feel the same way.
Thank you very much, Gene.
You're very welcome.
And Jason?
Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure.
You have been listening to Ears on Art here on KCBX. Our guests today have been vintage car lover and restorer Gene Krueger and a young painter, Jason Town, who is actively pursuing and teaching himself what brings him the most reward. Here now is co-host Stephen DeLuque to fill you in on all the wonderful art things that you can enjoy this October here on the Central Coast.
Hello, everyone. We have Art After Dark in San Luis Obispo this Friday evening. There are many different locations throughout San Luis Obispo, and you can find a list at artsobispo.org. The Congregational Church, located at 11245 Los Osos Valley Road, is starting their Art After Dark exhibition at 5 p.m. instead of the usual 6 p.m. Art After Dark goes until 9 p.m. at all participating venues. Be sure to check out the Open Studios Art Tour preview show at Art Central on Monterey Street. The Open Studios Art Tour is the next two weekends, October 8th and 9th, and 16th and 17th, and all the information concerning the tour is available also at artsobispo.org. Both Krissa Hewitt and myself are participants once again in the Open Studios Art Tour and would love to have you stop by and say hello. The Surfboard Art Walk continues in Morro Bay through November 30th at participating businesses. Maps are available at mbsaf.com or at the Morro Bay Visitor Center and Chamber of Commerce at 695 Harbor Street in Morro Bay. At the San Luis Obispo Museum of Art, we have two exhibits opening on October 7th. The first is a show presented in conjunction with the Central Coast Printmakers titled Pressing Matters. This juried exhibition features prints and artist books by artists from the western states. The works are displayed in the Gray Wing through November 13th. Also opening on October 7th, in the McMean Gallery, is an exhibition presented by the Central Coast Craftmakers titled Falling. This juried exhibition is on view through November 27th. A reception is happening this Friday from 6 until 9 p.m. in conjunction with Art After Dark. You have been listening to Ears on Art, a twice-monthly show produced at the studios of listener-supported KCBX Public Radio, serving the California Central Coast. Ears on Art is dedicated to the exploration and the advancement of the visual arts. My name is Stephen DeLuque, and for co-host Krissa Hewitt, we thank our listeners for their continued support. We hope to see you at this year's Open Studios Art Tour.